This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, today we got a great show. We've got a gentleman named Ivan Barrett. He's a multifamily owner, manager, and syndicator who specializes in agency and FHA finance projects. If you don't know what that is, he'll explain it later. Since 2014, Ivan has raised over $24 million in equity, acquired over 1,800 units, and grown Barrett Asset Management to a best-in-class management firm. Today, Ivan Barrett focuses most of his time on equity finance, acquisitions, firm strategy, and human capital. Currently, his company manages well over $100 million in assets, comprising over 2,200 units. Well, Ivan, gosh, just reading that bio made me tired. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Oh, thank you so much, Bill, for having me. It's great to be on your show. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, well, the pleasure is all ours. We appreciate your coming on.
Thank you.
You've got a great background here, and I'd really love to hear how you got involved in real estate. I mean, have you always been in real estate, or did you just kind of one day just, boom, this is the place I want to be? Yeah, tell us your story.
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky in some ways. So my dad is an attorney. He owned a handful of rental properties growing up. And my younger brother and me, when I was 7, 8, he was about 6 or 7 years old. In those days, you could not report your dad to child services for making you do manual labor all summer long.
Painting and fixing up, rehabbing.
Well, we would get awoken at the early hours all summer, and we'd be mowing yards and pulling weeds and helping with the landscaping and this and that, mostly on the outside of the property. And I hated it, so it did a couple things, which I'm sure was all by design, but it developed this disdain for manual labor and also a motivation to get higher education.
Get as far away from real estate as possible, right?
Well, but it dawned on me one day, why would you ever want to get a real job, Bill? Why would you just own a bunch of rental property? Like, how easy could that be, right? You just sit around and the cash flow comes in. So fast forward, it turns out it's a real job. Spoiler alert. But I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it a lot. I went to school, Indiana University. Their business school has a phenomenal real estate program. So got to learn all the foundations of finance and development and valuation and law. Graduated with a little student loan debt and learned that I could basically get the same education with a few seminars and a few books. But still wouldn't trade the time in. And from there, I worked for a real estate developer for, gosh, almost 8 years, getting an MBA in some aspects of real estate. And then the world changed. And I found myself less than broke, a couple hundred grand in debt, a bunch of failed projects, a girlfriend that I was trying to convince to marry me. And I was pretty, you know, pretty down in the dumps at that point. And that's when I really got back to the basics and picked back up a copy of Rich Dad Poor Dad, which my dad had given me early on in my life, and realized that I had forgotten everything that got me into real estate in the first place, basically the cash flow side of things. And I had gotten infatuated with speculation and flipping. So I hit the reset button on my life. I started climbing out of all that debt. I started a property management company in my spare bedroom and started buying small rental properties, 2, 3, 4 unit deals, and scaled it from there to where we're at today. We own quite a bit of units. We manage still for other people. We've got 54 employees, and we're just getting started.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. All in Indianapolis, huh?
So my projects are all over the state of Indiana. We are in Indianapolis, and then we've got some other communities that are in tertiary cities. We don't do student housing. We focus primarily on the workforce, but we're in some college towns here in Indiana. And then we also acquired our first project in Ohio, our first out-of-state deal, which is between Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio, along that I-75 corridor.
Right. Well, that's pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And ambitions to continue out into the landlord-friendly states, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, as we scale.
Well, it sounds like you've scaled pretty far so far. I mean, 2,200 units is definitely quite an accomplishment there, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. It all started with one duplex.
I love it. Well, so you actually started buying. What was the first property you purchased?
Well, so again, you know, I was lucky to have the father I had. I graduated college, and he said, hey, I'm not going to help you buy a home unless you buy a duplex, live in one side, and rent out the other, and I'll match your down payment. So I did that, and then I didn't buy another income property until 2010 because I was infatuated with development and speculation. And in those times, if you built it, you sold it. And so I was definitely on my way to being a cowboy with a big hat and no cattle.
I like that analogy. That's great. So you're basically a buy and hold guy, right? I mean, are you flipping your projects, or are you just you're building them up, holding on to them for the long term?
Primarily buy and hold. I've only just now started selling some of the smaller assets. In 2010, I started buying smaller distressed assets. They were either physically distressed or the seller was distressed. It was still the Great Recession, and I would go in with hard money because I had no real money of my own, and I would solve those problems, renovate them, refinance them on bigger pockets. Now I think they call that the Burr method.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now that we're going into larger projects, I've only started selling just this past year my smaller assets as we continue to buy larger projects, usually between 200 and 300 units now.
So in the beginning, you start off using hard money. And I mean, have you grown it pretty much just within your own assets? In other words, borrowing against those or generating cash flow so that you can save to purchase the next. I mean, did you primarily own it completely, maybe with a mortgage, at least in the beginning?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. So my first few deals with hard money was all me, and I would add a lot of value to those deals, refinance, take some cash out, but then I'd go find another deal where I didn't have to put a lot of money in because I was looking for extremely distressed assets that were in good locations. From there, I started buying apartment complexes, a 30, a 35, a 15, and that's when I started taking on one or more partners and doing syndication light. Then we got up into the larger assets. But as far as mortgages, we're always a fan of good debt. So we look for deals now where we can use Fannie, Freddie, FHA financing, which allows us to get meaningfully better terms from versus the banks, which allows us to take a lot of future risk off the table. And what I mean by that is banks will only lock your interest rate in for 5 or 7 years, very similar to an ARM mortgage. Whereas if I go to the government-sponsored entities, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, they also have multifamily lending arms that do billions in apartment loans. With them, I can lock in rates for 10, 12, and sometimes 35 years. Now, after the first 5 or 10, you can still refinance or sell with no penalty. But if you don't want to sell or it's a bad time to sell, you're not forced into having to roll over that debt like you would in an adjustable rate mortgage or a balloon payment that the banks adhere to.
Now, we've talked a lot about Fannie and Freddie agency type loans in the past, but tell me about FHA and what they're doing in multifamily.
Yeah, so FHA and HUD have the best financing available. There's a lot of hoops and a lot of brain damage to get it, a ton of compliance, both before and after you get their money. But if you know what you're doing and you've got a large enough deal, they are 85% leverage on the purchase and renovation of the property. So if you're doing a big value add, you can leverage the renovation. It's a 35-year fixed note. So what that means is it's 35-year amortization, which helps your cash flow. And it's also fixed for the entire 35 years if you hold it that long.
Gee whiz. And what kind of rates are they at right now?
Right now, they're typically running anywhere from 75 to 100 basis points below even Fannie and Freddie. So right now, they're in the low fours, where Fannie and Freddie are in the high fours, and banks are maybe 50 or 75 basis points above that.
And when they get into the, now I'm familiar with FHA for small multis, you know, a lot of folks still do the 3.5%, you know, percent
down.
Yeah,
the owner occupied, house
right.
Hack. Yeah, sure.
But
yeah.
But in the in the bigger multis, what is there like a certain asset size or dollar value?
Well, there's a lot of fees and there's a lot of legal and there's just a lot of work and it takes a big team to pull it off. So typically you're using that financing if you're over 80, 90, 100 units so that you can spread those costs out.
Right. And did you say 85% leverage? Wow, that's
85% leverage, which is something I normally wouldn't take, right? Mm-hmm. But if I can fix it for 35 years at a below market interest rate, I'll take it all day long.
God, that is great. Now, I mean, do you have to have attorneys on staff to be able to handle the application?
The legal fees do add up. Yes, you need a good legal team. I don't have attorneys on staff, but I've got three accountants now because there's ongoing compliance. We have to turn in our financials on a monthly basis to our HUD servicer. We are audited every year, which I haven't met an investor yet that doesn't like that fact, but it is just another expense and another time consuming hoop that you have to jump through. In other words, they don't just give you the money and say, good luck. They also monitor the quality of the asset. They inspect it physically every so many years and you're scored on your asset physically, from a deferred maintenance standpoint. So their mandate is to make sure that as a private capitalist that you're providing safe, clean, affordable housing that's up to code, ADA compliant if it's built after a certain year, that sort of thing.
Now, when you say affordable, are there restrictions in terms of rents with an FHA loan?
No. I'm glad you brought that up. I almost forgot, Bill. I get that question all the time. HUD finances all asset classes A, B, C, and D. Yeah, they offer this financing for market rate apartments as well. If you peel back the onion for all the big multifamily guys out there that have been through at least a couple business cycles, many of them have at least a healthy percentage of their portfolio financed via FHA and HUD. It's a great way to take a lot of risk off the table.
Are the qualifiers higher than for Fannie and Freddie?
Qualifiers? Boy, there's a lot more paperwork. Mountains of paperwork. They don't mind killing trees over at FHA.
Right. So, but do you think the in terms of the requirements? I know with Fannie and Freddie, you definitely, you know, one, you've got to have the you know, sometimes a sponsor if the value of the property is you know, higher than your management team or what have you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. They're looking at the balance sheet of the sponsorship group. Absolutely. There are some guarantees that we have to sign. It's for the most part non-recourse, but you can. There are some triggers there if you don't behave properly. And then the property management company has to be approved by HUD to manage a HUD financed property, which we've achieved that the hard way, which is just learning by doing.
Is that kind of tough though? You know, you've got a property under contract and you've got a short cycle in terms of escrow closing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, to be able to do all that paperwork. Yeah.
Oh, another great question. And if you look into the details, the way these are set up with our servicer originator, they also own a bank. So we are underwritten to HUD standards up front, but we use a bridge loan so that we can close in a timely manner. And then we spend the next 3, 4, 5 months getting the HUD approvals in place. And our bank bridge lender is comfortable with this because they've been originating HUD debt for 25 years.
Wow. Yeah, that probably keeps a lot of those bridge loan makers in business, I would imagine. Gee whiz. Wow.
Well, we don't go outside. It's the same. It's actually the same pair of pants, just two different pockets here in town. I'm very lucky. I've got a great relationship with the seventh largest HUD originator servicer in the nation, and they happen to also own a bank. So they've got a few programs at their disposal that allow their clients to run a little faster and play a little bigger.
Yeah, well, I bet. Well, you know, Indianapolis is an area we really love, and we talk about it quite a bit. And I'm also an investor in Indianapolis, and I love it.
I love
what's going on there right now. It's just very exciting. When I first got involved, I thought it was probably more, you know, slow and steady. This is great, but you know, now I would say it's an emerging market. There's definitely some great things going in there. What is difficult is it's also become a lot more competitive, though. That's for sure.
No question. We wanted to do 6 deals last year, and we ended up only closing on 3. Right now, we're having to run through 200 opportunities to find one.
Wow. Yeah.
Very competitive. Indy's firing on all cylinders.
Yeah. Are you doing a lot of sort of off-market marketing things to go direct to seller, or are you just working with your broker's team?
Well, at our level, even the off-market deals still often come through brokers.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've had some success assuming some HUD-financed projects, we've had off-market deals brought to us because of our transactional experience. I'd say about half of our deal flow right now is some form of off-market.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You know, you've been in this real estate game from early on. You've started small and you've worked up. Now you're in the 200-300 unit properties that you're looking at. What would you say was sort of the biggest learning mistake that that happened to you in the course of that time?
Well, you know, Bill, we could have a couple of podcast episodes on all the mistakes I made. I have paid a lot of tuition to get here, both on the management side and the acquisition side. But I thought, you know, the number one, probably biggest mistake kept me up a lot of nights for a very long time was the second bigger deal I bought. At least at the time, it was a big deal. I bought a 30-unit POS. If your audience knows what that means, a very, very distressed property in what I perceived was an up-and-coming area, and spent the next almost 4 years digging out of that hole. And luckily, it didn't kill me, but it very well could have. I bought early. It did finally become a great area, but I bought a little too early, which is almost like being wrong. I made a couple of the ultimate errors. I paid too much for it because I wanted to get into a bigger deal. And I just come off a six unit renovation. So I thought I really knew what I was doing, and I paid too much for it. And I thought I could turn it around with a little bit of money, and the rest of the renovations would be done out of cash flow. So, for anybody that's listening, that is the mortal sin in multifamily, is thinking that you can renovate little by little out of cash flow. You just get in this this death spiral of maintenance and repairs and bad tenants and collections that ultimately could have killed me. Fast forward a couple years later, we've maxed out a couple of business credit cards to keep this thing going. It's still not doing what it should. I floated some of the expenses through my management company as long as I could. But finally, because it was a good location, it ended up saving me. And I was able to get a new development loan, take out all the old debt, get a new development loan. We threw everybody out, started over, and we're able to raise rents dramatically. And I just refinanced the property onto a Freddie Mac small balance deal for almost twice what I had into it.
Oh, man. Wow. What an experience. How long
was Oh, my gosh, yeah.
How long were you in it before you were able to do the refi and sort of reboot the tenant to pool there?
Well, I bought it first in, let's see here. I don't want to get my dates wrong. I've had a couple more kids since then. I bought it in 13, mm-hmm. and continued to bang my head against the wall until, I think, late 16. Was when we were able to get a development loan. So had it for 3 years and just ended up being more in the hole. And then in late 16, early 17, we closed on the development loan, and it took all year to get everybody out, reboot the property, new windows, new HVAC, new kitchens, new parking lots, new landscaping, get it leased up again, and get that 90-day track record sufficient to refinance on a Freddie Mac small balance program.
You did the whole rehab in 90 days or?
No, it took the better part of a year.
Oh, okay.
What I meant was once you're up and running, you've got to be able to show Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae that you've had 90% occupancy
right.
for at least the past 90 days.
Right. So if you kicked everybody out, or was this how do you do that? You brought in new folks while the rehab is going on?
Well, a little bit of that, but when we knew we were going this development loan route, we started not renewing leases, letting them go month to month, and putting in any new leases that we had the right to cancel your lease with a 30-day notice. So we sort of slipped that in there in the fine print of our leases, so that we could time it up to tell everybody, hey, we're starting over, we're renovating this project, you know, it's not you, it's us, kind of thing.
Okay, so all right, got it. So you had the old tenants, you put them on a new lease that where you gave you the option there to be able to get somebody else in there. Is that right?
Yeah, because we were going from an area that it was renting for the low 400s for a 2-bedroom to where now they're renting a little north of 800 for a 2-bedroom.
Oh,
so
great.
Still on the affordable end, on the affordable end of an up and coming area, but certainly a different. Level of resident paying that 800 than paying the four.
Older building?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 60s yeah. vintage.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Needed a lot of work.
Gotcha. All right. Great. Okay. So looking at the biggest mistake, definitely a great comeback from that. What would you say your biggest success has been to date?
My biggest success has been on the human capital side. As I grew, about 3 years ago this summer, I partnered with a gentleman who I developed a business relationship with, and he is the yin to my yang. He's the peanut butter to my jelly, Bill. we are the exact we're the exact opposites. I'm the high level entrepreneur, head in the clouds, you know, running full steam with 100% optimism. And he's the what can go wrong operator, nose to the grindstone, detail oriented, COO of Baird Asset Management. So we've really together, we're much stronger, and we've really been able to bend our growth curve in the last 3 years.
Wow. Did you ever read the book Rocket Fuel?
No, I'll put it on the list.
Oh, you got to read it. It's all about the some of the most successful companies in the world and how their partnerships have been. It's really interesting because you nailed it to the T, you know, where you have one person who is the visionary. Okay. And then
yep,
you have
the entrepreneur.
The person that's got the great vision for what everything is, but then you've got the other person who is the operational guy, and that person is really the one that the nuts and bolts guy that can actually make the dreams of the visionary happen. You know, they looked at people like Jobs and Wozniak, Bill Gates, and I don't know who I'd say the other person with Gates, but put the two together, how you had this amazing team that causes the synergy in that company to change. But that's what it sounds like happened here. Is you've got somebody like that? Yeah, a really.
I couldn't agree more. He's not as good looking as me, but he's 10 times smarter.
Yeah, well, if we had him on the phone, I'm sure he may question that, but no, you never know.
No, it really does take two, and I would stress anybody out there in your audience, if you're looking to partner, you know, the best thing you can do is find somebody that's the opposite of you. You know, you're either the operator or the visionary, and it's maybe there's a one or two unicorns out there that can be both. But I haven't found one yet.
That's an anomaly, I think. It definitely happens, and there are companies that are run by people like that. But I think what you're saying is a little bit more realistic, which is great. Now, was this somebody that you was a business partner, somebody that was already an employee? How did you meet this partner?
Yeah, so Adam was a multifamily broker who was on a two-person team, and he was the brains on that team as well. And I had toured some properties with him, and we had had a couple of conversations. And, you know, he was just kind of rough around the edges guy, but extremely smart, mind of a steel trap, knew every deal. And we were out to lunch one day and had a conversation about how I started my company and where I was at. And he knew that I was looking for some operational help. And initially he came in as just a sweat equity partner on all our new acquisitions. And unfortunately for him, I figured out he was a great operator as well. And so slowly but surely, he became the top of the food chain for our management company. Today, he's the COO. He's a partner in the operating company. And everyone essentially reports to him. I'm out there on the equity finance side of things, on strategy and vision, and how do we get from 100 million to 200 million?
That's excellent. Excellent.
And he,
great.
He makes sure all the trains are running on time.
Love to hear that. That's great. That is so cool.
I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah. No, that's the kind of, I think a lot of folks are looking for, especially trying to grow businesses, to find that other partner in there. You know, our audience is primarily folks that are 50 plus. They're either approaching retirement or they're already in retirement, and they're realizing there's a little income gap there. And a lot of them are looking at real estate investing as a means to be able to bridge that gap. And beyond that, you know, they're looking at maybe creating something that could be a legacy too, that they could hand down to their kids and grandkids. And we don't actually have, you know, I'm one of those old dogs there that defining. We really don't have sort of the long time frame that a young man like yourself would have to be able to grow things. So we're looking first off immediately cash flow, and second of all, you know, to be able to stabilize something that we could just generate passive income from, so we could still enjoy our retirement years and that time. What kind of advice would you have? I mean, you've definitely been through the hard knocks and been through real estate investing from ground up. What would you say or recommend to these folks so that they could bridge that gap, but also have that passive income flow?
Sure, Sure. I think first and foremost, education is important, but so is action. And building that momentum and just taking action with whatever you're comfortable with. I think if you're looking more for solid passive yield on some wealth maybe that you've already got accumulated, but you know this happens with a lot of my investor clients who are older and mostly retired. They want to get better yield than savings and bonds, but they don't want to take stock market risk. Because they've seen too many roller coaster rides, and so they'll invest passively with me to get a yield in that low teens range and to have that cash flow. So that's one route going in a syndication route with qualified sponsors. I think if you're out there and you need to build more wealth and you want to do that a little more quickly, I think it's very feasible. And if you've got that time on your hands to learn. About flipping houses, learn about solving problems. In real estate, the real money is made by solving problems. So if you can go out and identify opportunities in your market, properties that need to be renovated, perhaps it's a similar method to what I did where you're renovating some small multifamily and then refinancing it, or maybe you don't want all that leverage. You just want the cash flow off of some units, keeping that leverage low. But where you can find those opportunities in your own backyard, I think if you're looking to build some chunks of cash, I think that's a great way to get started. And I don't care what anybody says. In any market, in every location across the country, there are always opportunities for those willing to work hard enough to see them.
That's great. Great advice. Your company has definitely gone through different stages, I'm sure, from when you first started just investing on your own to growing it, taking on property management as part of your model there, hiring people. That's a tough thing to do, and not everybody can do it effectively. You know, what do? Do you wait till you have the income to hire folks, or do you, take out a loan to bring in, the real talent as you start to build up your staff? I mean, sure. This growing and scaling aspect, give us some wisdom in there. How have you been able to do that effectively?
Yeah, sure. The answer to your questions are yes. I've done it both ways. So a lot of times, especially early on, hiring and managing and firing and hiring and firing and firing again, a lot of days made real estate seem much easier.
Interesting.
What I did, I got up to 70 units under management, and most of those were other folks' units as I was scaling my own company. And I would say if I could go back in time, I would have hired someone sooner. Had I known then what I know now, I would have started hiring faster. And at certain inflection points in our company, I have absolutely taken out a line of credit to acquire top talent in an area that we needed it, because I had faith in it that if I invested in myself and my company, that I could go back out the door and get the revenue to justify those new human capital acquisitions. So absolutely, I've done that.
Ah, that's
and
great.
And we'll do it again for sure.
Yeah, I think sometimes a lot of people don't see that as, an aspect of real estate investing, but really, in order to, you can only spread yourself so thin, right? And you could probably do every aspect of your business, but are you effective doing that? No. I mean, you've got to focus on the area where you really shine and where you add the most value, right?
Absolutely. And in property management, bad property management can screw up a great deal, and great property management can turn a bad deal around. It's really where the rubber meets the road.
Well, that to me, I'm an out-of-state investor. So I'm here in Southern California. I'm investing in Indianapolis and Atlanta and Memphis. And property management is everything for me. I mean, if I have a bad property management firm or team or person, I'm doomed. I mean, you can just
sure.
Totally kiss that any kind of profit in that property, just goodbye. So that's one that really interests me here is You obviously at one point said, look, I'm going to manage these myself. What happened, and what do you bring to the, you know, to the game here to be different than so many of the other property management firms out there that, I mean, it's a tough model. I mean, there's such a small spread there. How can people hire the people to be able to provide the kind of service that you really need to properly maintain a property?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Bill. A good entrepreneur friend of mine owns several restaurants, and he feels great if he can hit a 15% margin. I wish I could hit half that in property management.
I get it.
So I can always spot a rookie investor when they talk about being nickeled and dimed, because property management is a game of pennies. Mm-hmm. It is such a tight margin. The issue is, though, is it's the machine that makes everything work. So for us, our chief aim, our mandate in our property management side of it isn't really to generate a lot of profit. Sure, there's a little cash flow left over that we can reinvest in some newer projects. But it's really the critical machine that runs my wealth accumulation bucket. If I don't have that machine and it doesn't work well, everything falls apart. So rather than make really any profit, it puts food on my table. It allows me to hire some talent, and it allows me to stay disciplined on deals. I don't have to sell a deal or refinance a project or buy that next project, right, in order to meet payroll. So in those years when we want to do six deals and we only get one done, the whole thing doesn't come down. I don't have to lay people off. We're still standing. And our investors appreciate that as well, because they don't want to be force-fed mediocrity. They want me to wait until I find an actual deal. So how do we make ourselves different, I think, was where we got started on this.
Right,
You know, it's a big secret. So can we keep this just between you and me?
No problem. And the thousands and thousands of listeners listening. Yeah, no problem.
Perfect. So we pay people really well, and we tend to get better people that stick around longer and do a better job.
That's great.
The second part of that is I am relentless about great technology and great tools that help people be more effective in their job. So we have some great communication that we have. We focus a lot on culture. We've got more holidays now than a government agency, because we want, especially in a low unemployment environment, we want people knocking on our door because they want to be part of the BAMFAM, not scraping the bottom end of the barrel looking for folks to fill spots. We treat our maintenance people like gold. They're really a huge part of what makes this thing go. And we try to, as we grow, maintain that family atmosphere.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, that's you answered one of the questions I had. Is I know that Indianapolis has one of the lowest unemployment numbers now in the country. I mean, just.
Oh yeah, and in the trades, for skilled trades, I'm sure it's even lower.
Oh yeah.
There's so much construction going on.
I was just out there, and I had, you know, like a month before I was going to head over, and I needed somebody to help me rehab one of the units, and I couldn't find anybody. I mean, I was looking in Home Advisor and Angie's List. I couldn't even find a handyman to help me. I mean, it was like so frustrating. And it's because everybody's working and there's more work than there are people. So people can get, you know, they can just pick and choose their wages. It's just it's definitely a competitive environment.
Yeah. Yeah. Wild. So when we get those true maintenance technicians that really know what they're doing, can turn units, light electrical, light plumbing, respond quickly and efficiently to resident work orders, we'd be silly not to treat them like gold. They're a dying breed, and they're what makes this whole thing happen. It's tough, but it's not impossible.
Oh, I get it. I totally get it. I mean, I remember when I first, you know, first invested there, I had a little duplex, and the company that I was working with, it was like a turnkey company at the time. I was looking at the prices that they were doing things and charging, and I was, oh, this is crazy. I mean, don't you bid these projects out? They said, no, we don't. We have our team and we work with them, and that's it. And I'm going, well, that's not the way I like to operate. And so it kind of frustrated me. I eventually ended up moving on to a different property, but now I get it. I mean, I definitely understand that when you get good people like that on board, and basically that was the choice they made, is I'm going to keep this client, or am I going to keep my contractors that took me forever to, you know, to build up, and they chose the contractors. So that was a yeah, tough lesson, yeah. But boy, you know, I mean, I get it. I definitely get it. You know, you've got this great, great company that is just doing some neat things. What is your sort of long-term vision for BAM, or Barrett Asset Management?
Thank you. We strive to grow to a 20,000 unit multifamily asset management firm. So for us, really two companies grow out of that. One is the property management side, and then the other side, it really evolves into a financial services firm as we grow. Right now we've got 80 LP investors. The two-thirds of those investors are in one or more deals. About a third of them are in two or more projects. And so that side of the company becomes mission critical as we develop into larger stewards of others' capital.
Great. Well, it looks like you're definitely on your way to some exciting things ahead here.
Thank you, sir.
We have a little, we're kind of moving to our closing here. I could stay on here much longer. I have a ton of questions for you, but maybe offline I'll be able to get. But
well, next time you're in Indy, Bill, dinner's on me.
Oh man, I'll take you up on it. Definitely would love to.
So.
Yeah, I just found out about this place called Tech 16 or 16 Tech or something.
Park downtown.
Yeah, I didn't even know about this, and it sounds like a neat place to invest. So I might want to pick your brain about that area too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to give you a tour of that whole area, how it's changed over the last 20 years, how it ties into the university's 20-year growth plans. It's nothing that's going to happen overnight, but with the growing tech scene down here in the bio life sciences and the universities, Purdue and Indiana University, that are both in downtown Indy, there's a lot of momentum behind that area.
Yeah, I even heard, is there sort of high-speed cable coming in there or something too? Or
yeah, they're running fiber through the whole area. They're right now, they just got a large bond issuance approved for a massive infrastructure rollout, which developers taking risk love to see new sidewalks and green storm basins and street lamps and decorative paving, all those things that tell everyone, hey, this is an area on the up and up.
I love it. That is so cool. Well, this is the point in our interview where we call it our wrap it up, where I ask you a series
of
quick questions. You got it.
Where okay,
you can
okay.
Give us some good resources. Are you ready for this, Ivan?
I'm going to do my best, Bill. Fire away.
Favorite real estate book?
Ooh, a lot to choose from, but I'm going to have to go with Emerging Markets by Dave Lindahl.
Great book. One of our top 20. Awesome. Favorite business book?
The last year it's been If You're Not First, You're Last by Grant Cardone.
I've heard that one. I haven't read it yet, but it's on my list. Most valuable website for success, of course, other than your own.
Okay, fine, not mine. Audible.com.
Oh yeah, I'm a big fan. That's falls in the next category I call favorite app.
Well, I've already used that one. I will say ProsperWorks which is my CRM, tied with Evernote.
Ah, great. How about your favorite quote?
Ooh. That which is an impediment to action is turned to advance action. The obstacle becomes the way. Marcus Aurelius, Roman Emperor.
Very good. And final question here. If you lost everything, everything you worked so hard to build, your assets, your house, your car, everything, and all you have is $1,000, what would you do with that $1,000 to relaunch your real estate investing business?
Oh, that's easy. That's an easy one. I would immediately start looking for a deal that I could take to my hard money lender to renovate a small multifamily project. I'd use that $1,000 to put down, because if the deal's good enough, you don't need a lot of cash when you're working with the right hard money guys. And then I'd keep finding deals and using other people's money. And I'm a broker as well, so I'd start offering some brokerage and consulting services till I stabilized cash flow again.
I love it. Love it.
Or I'd dig ditches.
Great answer. Hey, you know, getting that job just so you get the cash flow coming into your life here is the other. Yeah, that's real.
Anything to keep my kids out of living in a box. Anything, yeah, I got to do.
You got it. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of folks here that want to find out more about Barrett Asset Management and you. And what's the best way for folks to reach you?
Well, my phone number, and it goes to my assistant, but she handles my calendar. It's 317-762-2625, 317-762-2625. Our website's Barrett Asset Management, all spelled out. And Barrett is B-A-R-R-A, as in Apple, T-T. And I'm pretty easy to find if you Google me, Ivan Barrett. Pretty lucky with that spelling. Again, B-A-R-R-A-T-T. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere.
Awesome. This is really the one question here, actually the one task that you really have been waiting for.
I've heard about it. I remember. Yeah, I knew it was coming.
This is it. So, Ivan, give us your best old Indiana howl. That was great. It's like the dog died at the end there, but it was good.
The dog did die. I'm sorry.
I love it. That is so great. Well,
that's a great end, Bill.
I know. You should see. Some guys aren't so. You should have seen Robert Kiyosaki on that one. I thought he was going to say no, but he actually did it. So there we go.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back and find that show.
Yeah, you definitely got to. Actually, the best one, speaking of Dave Lindahl, I wouldn't say it was the best one, because we actually give away a what we call the Golden Howl Award. Okay, we put these all in a contest, and he didn't win it, but he was like runner up. And
Did Dave's howl have a Boston accent?
Oh, it was incredible. It was wicked incredible, you know.
Wicked smart howl.
Wicked smart, yeah. Yeah, you got to listen to that one. That one's a kick. But
will do.
Well, thanks so much, Ivan, for being on. I think you gave some great information there for all of our listeners.
Thanks for having me, Bill. It's been a true pleasure to be on your show.
Well, the pleasure's been ours. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Please note, old dog listeners, everything presented here today, including the links and some of these great resources that Ivan shared with us, as well as all the points that he discussed here, can be accessed in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. Just look for the episode with Ivan Barrett. Well, that is the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.